It's the Mayo News Football Podcast. I'm Rob Murphy, and this is the first lockdown episode of our podcast, I guess, on the line, as last time, in their own locations. John Gunnigan, welcome along.
Hi, Rob. Yeah, we're all confined to barracks, our respective barracks, I guess. In my case, I'm back again. I'm back up in the attic, and I could open the windows here and survey a very eerie, quiet scene in the city. Normally there'd be a hum of traffic, that's constant. That's gone. I haven't seen an airplane in, it seems like, a month. And
there's still some FedEx ones up there, John.
Yeah, very rare. I don't know when they arrive. They must come at some godforsaken hour of the night, because I haven't heard of a plane taking off or landing for ages.
And other delivery companies do exist as well, I should stress.
But you know, the other amazing thing as well is that you can hear birdsong up here in a way that I can't remember before. You could hear it outside, obviously, before, but you can actually hear birdsong in the house now, which is quite amazing. So we've all reverted to being country folk.
Mike, we are country folk, pretty much, if you can call townies that. I don't know, some people might dispute that.
Rob, welcome along anyways. Controversial. It's the first time I've heard you described as a country man. I think we might have to go to the TMO on that one, Rob. The irony isn't lost on me, Rob, that I basically live a Fintan Ruddy kick out away from you, and yet here we are, bunkered down and hunkered down on opposite ends of Ballinrobe, recording a podcast via Skype. How times have changed.
Yeah, I had to drive down and deliver a recorder, just a little bit behind the scenes stuff here, to your house, which made it even all the more strange, considering I handed it to you and then drove back to my location here.
Well, I washed my hands not casting any aspersions, Rob, but I did wash my hands when I went back.
It's a dangerous term in today's. Yeah, good point. Yeah, I should have done that. Well, too late.
That's the thing is, as Leo says, we're staying together by keeping apart.
Or in Rob and I's case, we're actually doing both. We're meeting up and handing each other recorders from safe distances.
At a safe distance, clearly. That's
Do you know what's
thing.
Funny, lads? And just, you know, if we can for a second, just go to you, Mike, first. It's everyone's reality is so different and yet so similar right now. You know, just driving through town, I suddenly realised I haven't driven through town at night for a couple of weeks, actually, and how quiet and eerie that whole scene is at what was it, 10 to 9 when I was driving down to you. But, you know, it's this kind of strange mix of both living in the same world that we're all living in, but each corner is different.
Yeah, you're dead right. And that thought struck me coming up on the show. We've got audio from Billy Joe Padden in Newry, Alan Burke in Perth in Australia, and Colin Sheridan in Beirut. And I couldn't help but think, listening to the three recordings we got from the lads, they might be living in completely different parts of the world to the rest of us. And yet, so much of what they're saying and how they're describing life where they live right now could apply to be it, you know, Dublin, Mayo, or whatever you're having yourself. Like, everybody is more or less now locked into this new normal, and it revolves around working from home, trying to kill huge chunks of time without sport, certainly without live sport. And in the case of Billy Joe, he asked the question, I won't spoil it completely for listeners, but he asked the question, the fact he's now watching matches from the 1978 World Cup, does that suggest that he's starting to crack? I would say yes, Billy Joe, it most certainly does.
Yeah, as somebody who is old enough to remember the 1978 World Cup first time round, that's probably not a bad choice. That wasn't a bad World Cup, as I recall.
Controversial, didn't Peru give Argentina about 6 goals?
That was only a minor detail.
Look, Billy Joe's at a stage. I think he'd watch the 1978 Comortas final if he could get his hands on it.
All right, definitely. If anyone's near Billy Joe, maybe just check in on him, see how he is. We'll hear from him later. We'll hear from Niall Dunn, our resident Mayo GA voice, when it comes to health and well-being at this difficult time, and he's got some really interesting angles as well. Because, you know, Mike, I just said to you beforehand, we need to talk to someone who's going to give us some coherent answers on some of these incoherent questions that we all have about everything right now, in terms of when will we get back, what will it look like, and all these questions that we can't possibly answer in the midst of a crisis.
Yeah, and as well as Niall being, you know, an authority on health and well-being, he's obviously the manager of Mayo Mental Health Association. He's the chairman of the Mayo GA Health and Well-being. But also, we were just chatting about this in the office yesterday. He has this incredible ability to sound upbeat and positive regardless of the situation we find ourselves in, you know. And that's a great characteristic to have. And I think he shares with is it Professor or Dr. Luke O'Neill, who I was listening to on RTE this evening. I mean, they can be delivering the most stark of warnings or the most important of information. And for some reason, it's the tone, it's the delivery, it's the sound of reassurance in their voice that you come away from listening to Niall Dunn and you think, everything's going to work out all right here. You know, they've got this. And surely that's the first rule of guys in those positions.
But isn't it a metaphor for the times as well, though, Mike? Because if you look at, you know, who are the voices that are coming through loud and clear now, you know, in Ireland, it's Dr. Tony Houlihan as well would probably be the star of the show. In the White House, it isn't that large ungainly orange creature. It's Dr. Anthony Fauci, and I'd say the same is true right across the world of people we don't even know. I think you know, the populists have had a good run for a long time. I think this is increasingly the time of the experts.
Brilliant. I like that. Mike, you know, we're obviously in-house here, so we're praising ourselves on this, but well done on the paper this week, because, you know, people will understand the challenge of doing sports journalism at this time. And yet, thanks to the great pool of writers we have, there's some great content there.
Yeah, it's funny. The number of people that I have met while social distancing, of course, and that have been in touch over the last few weeks to say, God, what are you guys going to write about now? And I'm sure it must be very quiet for you with no sport on. And I jokingly say, you might keep that to yourself, because I've got to try and keep myself and the rest of us in a job for the time being. And of course, like on one level, it's true. There is no live sport, obviously, but that's a wonderful opportunity. That's the way we see it, to really roll our sleeves up and to think, okay, let's look at things here that we would never have an opportunity to write about if we were running around the country chasing the Mayo footballers or the Castlebar Celtic soccer team or the Connacht rugby team or whatever it was. So we've really been working our way through a list of interviews and features and news angles that we've had on the back burner for ages. And I have to say, in the last 2 or 3 weeks in particular, we've been delighted with what we've come up with. And the reaction has been really good. Our digital edition is proving very, very popular. I think a lot of people are surprised. You can buy it, you can download it for just €1.50, which is, you know, ridiculous value for money, really. There are less people moving around now with the lockdown. It's proving it's slightly more difficult for people to get their hands on the physical paper. But whether you're living in West Mayo or you're living in Western Australia, you can download the digital edition on a Tuesday morning. And we've got a fantastic reaction to a few pieces in particular these last few weeks. The Andy Moran story last week about having to close his three businesses. I mean, that just gives, I suppose, an insight into, we're all guilty of it sometimes. We see these guys togged out and playing for Mayo or whoever, and we get caught up in that being their sole and only identity. But of course, all these guys they've got lives, they've got careers, they've got businesses, they've got another reality going on. And look at Andy's a great guy to chat to anyway. He gives it to you straight. And also this week I had a fascinating conversation with John Prenti last week, the Connacht Council Secretary. It started off with us discussing whether or not we'd have a senior championship, an inter-county championship in 2020, and his thoughts on that. And we ended up having a much longer debate about the real fear he has for the inter-county game. He feels the inter-county game, hurling and football, it's become a runaway train. He thinks it's headed for disaster, in fact, if we don't use this time to reflect on what it is the GAA should stand for. And whether you agree with him or disagree, the one thing I've picked up on today is that it's a story that people have really latched onto, and it's started plenty of conversations.
But Mike, the interesting thing about that, I thought, was that he didn't go the whole hog, if you like, because I think John Prenti makes a very interesting point, and I know he's been, the issue about the size of panels and the cost of training and the amount of training and all that has been, you know, a mainstay for him for a long time. But I thought it was interesting in a way what he didn't say, which was that as an adjunct to this is that the championship structure, I think, needs to be looked at as well, because that's part of the issue in terms of how big this machine has got and how all-consuming it has become for players, managers, and increasingly for supporters as well. Because that's what really struck me last summer, was that, you know, supporters were expected to turn out weekend after weekend after weekend to support their team over a summer. And you effectively had to devote your entire summer to supporting the team. Now, look, we all love Mayo, but by Jesus, we love the summer as well. And we kind of would like to have a bit of time too. And I thought, particularly after the Galway game, you know, you needed a good 2 weeks and possibly, you know, preferably 3 weeks to enjoy that one. But a week later, we were down in Killarney as well. So I do think what John Prenti is saying has merit, but I think there's more to it as well. And I do think that the pandemic has given us a chance to really think about that as well. I think it'll be very interesting if we do get to a stage where there is time, and I'm not even sure this will be the case, but if there is time to have a foreshortened championship, maybe like, you know, a good old-fashioned pre-qualifier one, just to see what the reaction to that is. I mean, are we going to go back to the structures we have up to now next year? I'm not sure we will. I'm not sure we can. I because I would agree with them to a large extent that the direction we're heading in, with an amateur organisation trying to mimic, if you like, a professional sport, is unsustainable.
Yeah, and I think you could agree or disagree with a few different points that John was making, but the one where I think it's very hard to pick a hole in, for me anyway, is the sheer amount of money that is being spent on inter-county teams. And like you hit the nail on the head there, John, I mean, it's an amateur game and we forget that. And I think, who knows what shape the world and Ireland is going to be in economically when the dust settles on this, or when we finally get out the far side, whether that's in 6 months, 12 months, 18 months. But can we really see a scenario where inter-county teams in 2021, 2022 will be able to spend a total of €30 million on their preparation? I would very much doubt it. And the kernel of his point in that regard is that inter-county teams are training too often and for too long. And there's no doubt the season is too long.
No, it's true. And in fairness to John, I mean, he has been saying this for a long time, but I mean, it's great in a way that your interview got out there at just the time when people will take notice, because he has been saying it repeatedly. And, you know, I think this is a message that needs to hit home, and it's a debate that needs to happen.
It just struck me there. He made a point. I remember flicking through his report, and I suppose this just underlines what we're saying as well. Like, when the season is on, it's helter-skelter, and you know, you're trying constantly to keep up with yourself. But he was telling me that in his annual report, which would have been published around about the back end of last year, he made the point that if things continue as they are, you're going to have the, I'm paraphrasing here, but essentially the Galway Gladiators playing the Mayo Mavericks in the whatever you're having yourself, Connacht Championship. You know, that basically everything will be, the family silver will be sold off and auctioned off, and we'll all be consuming a product sooner rather than later, as opposed to maybe following our county teams.
Brilliant. All right. From here, we have plenty more to cover, but we'll do that in a wee while. First of all, we did want to address some of those questions. Mike obviously mentioned that one of the key reasons for ringing John Prenti was just to see if we're going to have a championship this year from his perspective. But I guess, you know, rather than try and delve into some of the kind of speculation that's out there at the moment, in the midst of this, like right in the middle of the lockdown as we are when we record this, we thought maybe we'll just get Niall Dunn on and just kind of start to kind of see how we start to begin to address these questions, because there are so many questions questions around this current situation. There are so many people just willing to stand up and say this, that and the other about what could happen and what won't happen. Maybe the first point of call, though, is just to set the scene and just kind of say, where are we right now? We're 3 weeks since we spoke to Niall, 3 weeks since our last podcast. Let's have a chat with him.
Jay Stryker are proud sponsors of this podcast. When it absolutely, positively has to be financed on Wall Street. Visit our website at www.jstryker.eu.
All right, delighted to say a man who may well become a resident member of our podcast for a few weeks is on the line. Niall Dunn, you're leading the charge in Mayo GA just as we deal with this from a health and wellbeing point of view, and our mind space and our mental health being so important right now. Welcome back onto the podcast.
Thanks very much, Rob, and thanks again for having me back on. We were just talking there off air. It doesn't feel like 3 weeks ago since we've been on, but it obviously has been. And while some things are staying the same, a lot has changed too. And interesting times.
Oh, yeah, I was saying to you, though, that there'll be one or two people listening to this who've been in isolation, and it'll feel like 6 months since the last podcast. So we have to acknowledge that. Time is moving at different speeds for different people, I think, right now.
Yeah, it is. It is.
Come here. One of the things I wanted to get started with, because we're going to go through some of the details again for listeners later in terms of numbers to keep an eye out on, and maybe some of the things that are going on in the background from the Mayo GA perspective and within the communities. But what I wanted to talk to you about, first of all, we discussed an outline yesterday around the idea of maybe just trying to sketch out to people what a return to play might look like. And I suddenly realised in the last 24 hours, I'm not sure if I care that much right now either. I both really care about seeing football come back. And at the same time, here's my analogy, right? It's like a house is on fire. I'm holding the hose towards the house and I'm about to have a discussion about whether they'll build a conservatory when they rebuild it, because that's what sport is right now.
Yeah, it is. It is. It is. That's a very good analogy. And, you know, we just hope the house isn't that big, you know, and that the firefighters can tackle it.
Yes.
I suppose, from looking at a bit of research last night, Rob, before coming on your show, and again this morning early, before the kids got up, it's the only analogy I can sort of come up with at the minute is that everything just seems frozen at the minute, you know, and there's going to be, I think, a considerable thawing out period. And that thawing out period will only get life back to normal in some shape or form once that thaw has taken place. And I think within that thaw lies people, lies reassurance, lies confidence. And I think it's about building up that confidence as well, because no more than when there has been a big freeze, people need to know when to travel again, whether it's safe or not. And, you know, we can only take those reassurances from the powers that be, and in this case it's Dr. Houlihan and it's the HSE, the Department of Health, and we're looking at that. And I think I remember once being in a dressing room with the great Mickey Whelan, and he said to us one morning, he said, or one evening after losing a league final, he said to us, folks, he says, we're going to kick off this, he says, here for this championship. This is a bit of American twang. And he said, we're going to start training, he says, at 6 o'clock in the morning, you know, and we're going to go up to DCU and this is where we're going to do it. And we're all questioning them, you know. We're all saying to him, Jesus, this fell off his rocker, getting up at 6 o'clock in the morning to do gym work and things like that. But I remember our captain at the time, Mossy Quinn, when I was playing with Vincent, stood up and said, who are we to question him now? You know, he has been there, done it all, had won county titles, had played in finals. And I think we have to take that reassurance too. From the people that are giving us this information, because, you know, the way the GAA, especially in this line of things, the way the GAA can combat certainty around anxiety is that we're very open and transparent, and that there's good information being passed on. And I think all credit to all parties involved. I think they have nailed that one, and that we can deal with that information by making sure that the information is really simple and is understood. And I think that in any stressful situation you're in, or any pandemic in this particular case, I think once information is clear, it's truthful. I think it takes away a lot of the anxiety that's maybe there at the minute. But it's a big ask. It's a big ask of people. But we have to take confidence from what they're telling us, because, you know, the results over the last few weeks, you know, they do seem to be, albeit minute, they can be, there is improvement. And that for me is a big thing. And I think we're just getting closer day by day. You just hope that the world is working on this, and that in some ways the thaw will probably, you'd hope, is quicker than it is, but I think it's going to be taking quite a while.
Yeah, I like the analogy, because as the anxiety lifts, then was what we were trying to discuss. And I guess there's only so far as we can talk about this right now, but as it lifts, that's where it'll be harder to control. Because right now, obviously, following the experts is easy because there's a collective focus. There's a collective anxiety, and there's a collective will to get this right. But when it does come to kind of moving things on 2, 3, 4 months, we won't put a time frame on it, that's when people, certain people will be like, no, don't do it. And other people will be doubting the decisions that are being made. That's where the job of the GAA to try and get sports back will be quite difficult, right?
Yeah, that's correct. Like, when we talk about anxiety, I think it's important to understand what anxiety is about. I suppose an anxiety is an emotional response to an anticipated future threat. That's how we look at anxiety. And stress, then, like, you know, we talk about anxiety and stress as if they're, you know, they are probably related in some ways. And stress could be, you know, is something we're going through at the minute. The GAA has always been very proactive. And, you know, when you go back to the last pandemic here back in 1918, I was looking at, you know, the types of responses that they took to different things. And the GAA plays a huge role in all of this, in building up confidence within communities. And they will be the organisations that will take the lead again, I presume, in this, and listen to reassuring people and getting people back. But I think it will be different, Rob. That's just an opinion, of course. I think it will be different. I think it will be a slow start. Mm. I think there will be certain measures that I could see, maybe, you know, in relation to crowds and the amount of people that are allowed into games and different things. That's just an opinion, of course. But it's a reassurance for people. If you're anxious about something, you need reassurance. And I think it'll be done in piecemeal, maybe, to start off with. And then just to build up that confidence, the GAA will play a huge role in that, because we're a huge body, a huge organisation. And the only thing I can say about them is that their lead so far has been their response to this has been very, very quick. It has been, the information got out in a simple manner that people are able to understand, and it's been consistent. So it will be, and I think, you know, players are getting, you know, wondering will it go ahead. I'm at the same view at the minute. I think, you know, I'm just worried about people. I think people's social conscience as well also changes, you know, in relation to their response to all of this. I think they have bigger plays, you know, in relation to grandparents and older generations and different things like that. So it's about caring for all of that. Just at the minute, Gaelic will be an added bonus at the end of all. It'll be the conservatory, to your analogy, at the end of all of this, won't it?
It certainly will. I must say, Malachy Clerkin, both of us wrote a great article on Friday, and he really put into perspective. I loved his point that sport is a product of a functioning, settled society, and I thought it was a really well put. Like, because Malachy, above all people, knows the importance of sport and highlights it in his writing over and over again. But I think he helped put some kind of difficult to read perspective on it, because let's be honest, it is difficult for people to kind of get their heads around this. And look, us as fans, and that's what the podcast is about, we're journalists and we're fans, you know, we'll be okay. But one thing I wanted to ask you about, as a man who played football at club and a little bit at Intercounty as well back in the day, and how concerned are you for the younger and the older players who might be near retirement, players who were just club players, or to put that better, players who are club players and just dying for the next championship, all this. Like, they're our first priority in the GAA sense, aren't they? Before you can get to the fans and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. The one thing, Rob, I've been thinking about, because maybe between now and the last time we spoke, was this. It goes back maybe to the work that I'm involved in. I can only speak, I suppose, evidence around this piece of it, is that I think a lot of young people nowadays have a huge amount of skill when it comes to anxiety and stress. They get a lot of work in schools nowadays around it. Mm. It's completely different to when I was going to school. I'm 40 years of age now. You know, when I was playing football, the anxiety and stress was something seen as a weakness. Whereas nowadays, kids in school, especially teenagers, and people that, you know, over the last 10 years, so you're talking about kids now up to age, or teenagers, young adults, 25 years of age, they've got a huge amount of work around anxiety and stress and coping mechanisms and how to deal with it. Mm. And that's the huge positive for me. I think we can learn so much from them, because they get so much work on it. Like, I went back to college this year and finished up in April. And we get so much information out from InUIG down through our Blackboard and our emails, talking about health and well-being. So a lot of those teenagers are very well equipped to be able to deal with this. And I don't think sometimes they get enough credit for that. I'd be more worried about my age group upwards, if I'm being honest, because anxiety seems to play a bigger role in that. But we're young. With younger generations, they are well equipped. We just need to delve in and have conversations with them and what their coping mechanisms are. Because unless they've had their two fingers in their ears over the last 10 years, especially in Mayo, we're involved in every school when we talk about mental health, health and well-being, they get a lot of information around that, whether that's dealing with stress with exams, that's stress within the football context. But even and a lot of those people are now within our GAA community. So we must delve into them. We must not take it that I feel they are quite well equipped to be able to deal with this.
Another group of people I am specifically interested in your thoughts on are the players who are on the verge of retirement. If a certain amount of time is lost, which it is, so we're going to lose a certain amount of time for the season, possibly more. Does it accelerate the process of retirement for players? How do you think psychologically, mentally and physically players who might have been just thinking this could be my last year at my club or my county are going to deal with this pause? Will it make them drive on? Will it help them physically and mentally? What do you think?
Yeah, it's a very come back to an old saying, if you're young enough and good enough, you're old enough, and if you're old enough and good enough, you're young enough. A lot of those players know their bodies more than again, the science has really, the scientific side of the whole GAA over the last few years is since I even finished playing, it's like a whole new different ball game. A lot of those players, I'm sure, maybe the conversations would have to be with them, but I'm sure a lot of them too are enjoying the break there's probably less stress, less anxiety in some ways too, because there's a lot of pressure being an inter-county footballer, people thinking of when they're going to retire. It's like it gives them time to reflect too on what is important and not important. Maybe their own bodies could do with the rest too. They have a huge medical team involved, just say in our own county, and they're the experts, they're the people that will advise these players on where they're at. But from a body point of view or a human point of view, of course you will have those concerns, but you won't know. I don't think that them will be able to answer those until they get back out onto the field again. I don't think there's somebody thinking of retiring, they've lost out a year here. It could be a year that they get that break, or a period of time where they get that break to clear up certain things that have been going on, maybe finish off other things that they were putting on the back burner. It just gives everybody time to reflect. So I don't necessarily think that, Rob, to be honest with you. I think it this could be a positive in a lot of ways for players.
Niall, I'll put this to you in a couple of weeks' time when we're further into this lockdown and maybe further past this initial phase of the lockdown, maybe even getting towards the point where they're letting people back to some of the jobs that are curtailed for now. You and I should have a conversation at that point for our listeners where we start to kind of chart out what the next couple of months might look like. Because right now, obviously, you guys are just scrambling as much as the rest of us. But with that in mind, just to finish then, what's the key things that's going on within the Mayo GAA right now in terms of the clubs, the communities, and just some things you'd like to just turn people's attention to?
Yeah. So first of all, just to reassure people as well that our executive and our chairperson are in constant communication with the GAA at Croke Park in relation to how we're managing this and how we're handling this and planning for the future. That's the first thing I would say in it. The other part of it as well, I must again highlight the great work that the health and wellbeing officers are playing within all their communities. So if what we do each week, Rob, is that we send out information on a Friday morning, well, on Thursday evening, it goes up on the Mayo GAA website, which is simple information, as in practical information, that all clubs can distribute out to their communities to be able to deal with what's going on at present. So that's I suppose within the GAA network that we're constantly being updated, and we're constantly reassuring the resident or our community partners, i.e. the clubs. That's happening. So just as well, Rob, just on that, I just think it's important that part of our committee is made up of Dr. Catherine Sweeney, who has a practice in Ballandine. Catherine's Sweeney's practice is the Sweeney family practice. And she just wanted for me to reiterate today that I asked her today, obviously before coming on, if there's any messages that she wanted to get out. And one was, these are the ones coming from a GP, stay at home, it's working, and we're doing so And by doing so, people are actively contributing to saving lives. Keep washing your hands and coughing or sneezing into your elbow. Reach out to anyone you may know who is in self-isolation or cocooning to offer help with groceries or prescriptions or even just for a chat. And, you know, the fourth one, which caught my attention as well, don't be afraid to ring your GP if you have any concerns regarding new or old ailments that aren't related to COVID-19. You know, GPs are worried that their patients aren't contacting them now because, you know, the symptoms are because the newer rule symptoms as patients may feel they are too busy and that they don't want to be bothering them. So she's just concerned that maybe patients are people out there aren't in contact with their GPs because of all this COVID-related stuff. So it's just important to keep in touch with your GP and practice self-care and mind your mental health and stay positive. So there is a few helplines out there as well, Rob, for people that maybe might not have access to internet. Just that there's a local link number there for people that need help in relation to picking up groceries and different things. So it's 094-90-05-150. That's local link. And Mayo County Council have a very helpful number there, which is 094-90-64-660. So that's 094-90-64-660. And that's open from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. where you can ring in as part of your community looking for help and support. So that's where we're at the minute. Rob, I hope this all happens quicker, like all of us out there. We're back talking GA as soon as possible and back out giving out again.
Exactly. Well, let's schedule in a chat then and for a couple of weeks where we start to look at like what we know at that point for when teams might be able to start looking at training and all that kind of stuff. But for now, let's just accept where we are, I guess.
Yeah, and just keep the connectedness going, hopefulness, you know, and the whole piece of let's keep that hope alive and, you know, connect with people. That's really, really important. It's embedded into us when we talk about mental health and wellbeing, to stay connected to people, to people within your community. And, just look away at doing things slightly differently.
A couple of voices from around the world now. Two voices that we heard 3 weeks ago, just to update on how things are going for them. That's Colin Sheridan and Alan Burke. But before them, our own Billy Joe Padden. Mike just asked him to record a voice memo for us as well, just to kind of set the scene. And the first question Mike had for him is, how is he coping without sport?
I think I'm coping really well without sport, to be honest. I've been very busy with other stuff. Luckily enough for me, thankfully, we're still working from home during the week, and between doing that and trying to homeschool a couple of kids and help out with that, and my wife is at home as well, so it's not just all on me. It has been really, you know, there's been no real downtime, and the evenings have been just like the normal routine, really getting dinner and kids to bed and all that sort of stuff. I said AFT the other day, where my wife turns to me and says, you know, your life was dominated by sport, and I was thinking that in a positive way, whereas I don't think she was, but we didn't take that conversation on any further. But it has been a couple of weeks without that influence, and I have watched some things on television. You know, Mike, myself and yourself have talked about Tiger King at length, so it's quite entertaining, crazy Americans. And I don't usually read sports books, and I think in the absence of sport, live sport to watch on television or sport to cover, I have gone back reading sports books, and I'm reading Jonathan Wilson's History of Argentinian Soccer, Angels with Dirty Faces at the minute. It's a real comprehensive read. It's quite a lot in it, but very, very interesting, just on the culture of soccer in that country. And then Jonathan Wilson, I would say this to anyone that's interested in the tactical side of soccer or Gaelic football, his book Reinverting the Pyramid, about the history of soccer tactics, I found it fascinating. I think it's a great read, and it's a good recommendation for anyone. But I did find yesterday I hadn't any sport to watch, and I found myself watching back on the BBC iPlayer the France Argentina from the last World Cup, the one that France won, Mbappe, was really, really good. And I did watch a bit of, I have a Prime Amazon account, and they have all the official videos from the World Cup. So I watched a bit of the 1978 World Cup on that. So maybe I'm about to crack with the loss of sport. I think the other main news is, everyone knows I'm a big Liverpool fan. I think it's disappointing from Liverpool point of view, in their decision to furlough staff, from an identity point of view, from the actual ethical side of it, I'm not so sure. You know, much of those staff will have paid taxes, the club paid taxes, and maybe they're entitled to it, I don't know. But from an identity point of view, you'd have hoped that just Liverpool, I would have hoped that Liverpool just acted a bit better. But when you see what's the messages that are coming out of government, I think one thing that did really irritate me during the week was the British government's attack on soccer players. And it just showed to me, you know, that they specifically take out soccer players and say they should be taking a pay cut, whereas many other high earners in other fields of business or banking or construction, they didn't point them out, because just soccer players are an easy target because they're generally working class lads from poor neighbourhoods who've done well for themselves, or foreign lads from poor areas of the world who've come in and done really well for themselves. And I just think it's really despicable behaviour. And when I think about it, then I think about what we have in this country and the GAA, and I think it's vitally important that it never goes professional. And I don't think that the GAA would ever find itself in a situation where it'd be divisive in society. If anything, the GAA just brings more and more people together in this country, and that's something that I'm very, very proud of, and really can't wait for it to start back up again so that we can all go and enjoy it.
Good evening, everybody, from Beirut in Lebanon. This is Colin Sheridan here. I think the last time I spoke to you guys, we were all worried about going to Pier Stadium to play Galway in a league match. That seemed of grave importance at the time. A lot of water has obviously flowed underneath our collective bridges since then. And yeah, I think we all have a different sense of priorities now. Just to give you guys a bit of perspective on what it's like out here. We live on probably the busiest street in Beirut. It's like the shop street of Beirut. I'm standing out on my balcony here now at 10:30 at night, and it's dead quiet. Beirut is a kind of a strange city in that, having endured 15 years of civil war and countless occupations and revolutions, it has, the one thing that has endured throughout all of those things is how dynamic it's been as regards its social scene, whether it's restaurants or bars. And Jumaisi, where we live, would have been the centre of that. And it's gone now. It's dead quiet. And for as much as we would have lamented to have a bit of quiet and peace and quiet over the last year and a half, now that it's come, it seems most unwelcome. The very noise that was always on the street definitely drowned out a lot of my screams and cries at the laptop as I sat out in this very balcony and watched Mayo qualifiers and Super 8 games over the last couple of summers. So Lord knows if it ever comes around to those matches happening again, my neighbours might have something to complain about. But yeah, we're obviously thinking about everybody at home and in touch all the time. And I think, like everybody else who's living abroad from Ireland at the moment, of trying to weigh up whether we're better off away from home or at home at the moment with all that entails. So yeah, thinking of everybody. And while football is kind of the furthest thing from all our minds, at least we can look back at some things past and hope for some things that are coming in the future. And just, yeah, regards to all.
Alan Burke here, giving you an update from Perth in Western Australia. The last time we spoke was on the 16th of March. We had about 28 cases here at that time, and now we're at 453 with probably about 4 or 5 deaths. Australia-wide, we've had 5,841 deaths. Most of these have been associated with cruise liners that have come into WA and New South Wales. They've been a thorn in the sides of the authorities here, really, so they have. But I think they've been pretty much dealt with now. Yeah, in WA itself, the borders have been closed by the Premier. It's very hard to actually leave here at the moment. Very hard actually even to travel within the state. There's borders within the regions, so it'd be more or less, if you're going from Connacht into Ulster or Leinster, you'd be stopped and you'd have to have a very, very good reason now to get through. Yeah, the flight wise, I think we still have one flight going to Doha and to London, but it'd be pretty hard to get on there. And so it would, probably seen the issue, they were trying to get the 60 doctors from Perth back home to Ireland. They eventually got them there. So I believe that a lot of the doctors had actually their time finished up here, or they were very near their time finished, so they've all left. Probably not good for the likes of myself here and the family, but very good for the likes of the people at home. But listen, I think they're better off at home and look after their own families and look after all our families as well. So yeah, fair play to them. Anyone that comes into W at the moment, and if they can get in, is that they're in a 14-day isolation in the city in a hotel room. Some people are not liking it at all because they actually cannot leave the hotel room at all. That is it. Yeah, there's no leaving it. So it is what it is. Sporting wise, here there's actually probably there is no sport at the moment. At all, nothing at all is going on here. The AFL played round one on the 21st, weekend of the 21st of March. Before the round was finished on the 22nd of March, all games were cancelled indefinitely. So they're looking to maybe try and get going again in July and play maybe a different format for the season, something similar they're probably talking about in the GAA as well. But that remains to be seen. I think it really depends on how the cities go with how they're containing this virus. The GAA, GAA-wise, really Australia-wide, is cancelled at the moment here in WA. Should be probably getting ready to get going now in the next couple of weeks, but no, that won't be happening. And I think we've put a date of the 1st of June to have a look at things again, but I think it'd be quite unlikely. So I suppose Mayo are still the league champions, and you never know, Cathal Freeman might got a Guinness World Record for his marathon at the weekend. So that was great to see him raise a lot of money. And work-wise for myself, we're working in the construction industry. Things are still going along pretty smoothly at the moment. The Premier here, the state government here, trying to keep construction going, especially with all the mines. A lot of mining still going on here, so they're going to try and keep that going as best they can. School-wise, Ginny, my wife, she's preparing now to do online teaching for the next 5 weeks after Easter. That probably may go a bit longer, but the schools are pretty much closed. It's only kids that have parents working in essential services that are asked to attend school. That's about it, really. Still probably more concerned about the family at home. And mother works in the UCHG hospital in Galway, and she's been telling me about the fantastic work they've been doing up there, which is great to hear. And that's about it. Listen, stay safe all, and talk again soon.
Great stuff from the lads there. Of course, Billy Joe Paddon recorded his thoughts on Liverpool's decision a couple of days before they did their U-turn on that decision. And it's interesting to get his initial thoughts on that. I think Liverpool made the right call for sure, Mike. Here's a positive story, though. Before we finish, we have one more bonus interview. We didn't even flag it at the start. We saved a fee. He was all over the news this week, and we had to make sure the Mayo News Football Podcast caught up with the Mayo GAA Star of the Week, Cathal Freeman.
Yeah, Rob, what a man. I just checked out before we went to our respective bunkers to record this podcast, what Cathal's GoFundMe page was showing at this stage. He has raised just over €58,000 for charity. And I have to say, the last place I expected to find myself last Sunday morning was sitting in my office commentating on Cathal Freeman running around his back garden for an hour. And nice segue back to Billy Joe. Billy Joe was supposed to be riding shotgun with me, but we had technical difficulties. I found out about 10 seconds before we went on air that I would be flying solo for the for 58 minutes, give or take. And a big thanks to all those people who got in touch to say fair play to you for not making a complete hames of it, considering I was on my own. It was an absolute pleasure, and I was delighted that Cathal asked me to give him a dig out and to give a hand, because he's a fellow that I've always had a huge amount of time for. Anyone who knows Cathal Freeman will know there's just something about him. He's a very, very he's a real Mayo man, and he's an innovator, and he's a deep thinker, and he's one of these guys that when he decides to do something, almost inevitably he goes and does it. And to think that he ran for 7 hours around his back garden to raise almost €60,000 for the Irish Cancer Society and the HSE fund to purchase PPE, it's an incredible achievement, and he deserves every bit of praise that he gets.
Delighted to say on the line, Cathal Freeman, one of the stars of the weekend, Cathal, for reasons that if you had thought about it 2 months ago, you would have thought would have been ridiculous. But turns out it's just lifted the spirits of everyone. And congratulations on your efforts and the money raised.
Yeah, it was a bit of a mad weekend now, Rob. But delighted that there was so much money raised for two fantastic causes, firstly, and then secondly, the crack and the stories that came out of it, and people seemed to really get involved in it, and I hope it brought a lot of entertainment and happiness for a couple of hours into everyone's lives for a Sunday afternoon.
You know what, Cathal? A lot of us in media have been just wrestling with how to even, you know, create content and entertain people and what to talk about and what to do. And sports stars are no different either. So you stumble across something so simple, but just so kind of captivating for people. Did that surprise you that it just took off so well?
Hugely. You know, I suppose there was no grand plan for what this idea was going to be. I kind of thought it more started out as a bit of entertainment for myself and hopefully raising a small bit of money for two very worthy causes. But then it grew legs hour by hour and day by day as we moved towards the weekend. So, you know, as Liam Horan said, we were the only live sporting event in Europe on Sunday. So we didn't have much competition. But, you know, again, it was fantastic that we were able to be streamed by Mayo GA TV. Which definitely helped raise funds, but also raised the level of banter and crack that was had with it a lot as well.
You'll never look at that patch of grass the same way again. I think you'll probably remember
it. And the UL groundskeepers won't look at it as well. They won't thank me for it either.
I was looking at the path. Like, you kind of didn't realise. I suppose 1,500 journeys on a simple piece of grass is going to leave a little bit of an imprint. It certainly did.
Yeah, it's well worn now. I was going to wear boots as well, with studs, to do it, and then someone that is more experienced in long distance running said that was a daft idea, and thankfully they were right, because I think I would have been up to my knees if I had wore boots with the amount of muck that would have been in it.
Not to mention the soreness. You were saying that you've never been one for going out for a run, never been a long distance runner, which just makes this all the more remarkable.
I suppose the years of hurling and football training, you know, you'd be training all the time and you kind of feel like you're training all the time, but it'd never be that type of run. And, you know, as I've said a couple of times over the last couple of days, I've a housemate here with me in Limerick, Sean Flannery from Ballardreen, and he'd hop out the door on an evening and he'd run 5, 10 or 15K without really thinking about it, just for leisure. And I'd often come into him and he'd be just in from the run and I'd be shaking my head thinking, how could you possibly do that for fun? You know, I'm more of a fan of the short, sharp stuff that we do with hurling training, rather than the long, monotonous stuff that goes into long distance running.
Come here, how did you, because you've had to put yourself through challenges of training in winter months to try and get ready for hurling or for football, but how did you kind of work out the process of going through those 7 hours? What was it like kind of mentally in the mind to keep it going?
It was challenging at different stages. I suppose the start and the finish weren't actually that bad, because I suppose the novelty at the start, and obviously I had a couple of friends with me along that were having a few drinks while I was taking the first 100 or 200 laps of the track, so that wasn't too difficult. And then obviously at the end, when you're so close that you'll do whatever you have to do to get over the line, but definitely the middle section of the run was fairly difficult, but I would have to say the crack and the laughs that were going on in the commentary definitely helped. I think my reputation is in tatters with the public after some of the stories that were told by the commentators, but it definitely helped to keep a smile on my face and to keep me going when things were getting difficult.
Yeah, I was wondering that. It really was a nice setup. Did you get some technical help to set all that up so you could hear what was being commentated on? So as we've seen in plenty of online masses and plenty of other things, it's not the easiest thing in the world to get a Facebook stream working smoothly.
Yeah, as I said, the thing grew legs day by day, and I was incredibly lucky to have Paul Cunyon and Kieran O'Hara from Mayo GA TV get in touch with me. I think it was on Thursday night or Friday morning that they got in touch, And they literally took it all out of my hands. All I had to do was set up a laptop that my girlfriend and my housemates here helped me with. Brilliant. Just to get the stream going. And Kieran O'Hara sat on the laptop for the 7 or 8 hours that it was going on, and organized everyone, organized the commentary teams, and kept everything up and running as best we could. So I'm incredibly grateful to them lads. I really feel the stream and the commentary made it and helped to raise as much money as we did for the two great causes.
Yeah, that's a brilliant part of this whole thing. And I mean, look, it's a bit of crack, but you couldn't believe that you're going to not only break your initial targets. I think your highest target was 20,000. You've gone double and more, haven't you?
Yeah, it's inching closer to 60,000.
Wow.
As we're speaking here, which is
wow.
Geez, as I say it out loud, it's fairly hard to imagine that a daft idea that I came up with while I was meant to be studying is after making that much money in such a short space of time. But again, it's a great testament both to the GAA community and the Irish people at large, you know, that they just they've seen this daft idea and they've seen the two worthy causes that it was in aid of, and they got behind it in such big numbers, and everyone gave so much money, particularly in such difficult financial times for an awful lot of people. And I'm very aware of that, and very grateful for the sport.
Your two causes, just to remind people?
Oh, they are the Irish Cancer Society and the HSE staff for PPE for them. I think everyone has really, their eyes have been opened to the importance of the work that the HSE staff are doing in the fight that they're fighting on our behalf at the moment. And as well, I think Cancer and the Irish Cancer Society are an organisation that are doing fantastic work on our behalf against a condition and disease that affects pretty much everyone at one stage of their life or another. So two fantastic causes, two fantastic organisations, and the people within them deserve all the help that we can give.
I presume you're studying from home technically. I know you're ensconced in student accommodation, but no college for the moment.
We just have our course is fairly well set up for online classes, because it's all very small group based classes that we'd have. I mean, 8 or 9 would be the max we'd have in any one class when we were physically in classrooms. So we're still online. We're still doing online classes through a kind of Zoom type setup, and so we're kept busy, which is grand, because it gives you a bit of structure to your day and gives you something to focus on each day when you get up.
So you're doing medicine yourself, Carl, and obviously at this time, you know, anyone studying that in that area, you know, the future is transformed, unfortunately, for us as a society. But the importance of what you're doing is probably not lost on you as well.
I suppose in some way, although again I said there was no grand plan, I suppose in some way the whole event was born slightly out of a want to get involved in some way, and obviously I don't have the skills to be involved in the hospitals at the moment, but I suppose it's doing the event was my way of probably trying to get involved. But again, we all can play our part in terms of following the guidelines that the government have laid out. And if we do that, we'll be doing a great job for the people in the hospitals that are working, the doctors, the nurses, the porters, the physios, the radiographers, and everyone in between. You know, that's the best thing that we can do to support them at this moment. So, yeah, it's a good field to be in, but we do need to help those people on the front lines as best we can.
Important question here, Carl, just to finish. Going back to hurling, when you eventually get back there, are you going to have improved control of the slitter on the hurl as a base after these 7 hours?
Was there room for improvement,
Carl, would be a better question.
There was 26 drops, so there was definitely Ooh. Room to improve. I'm sure Derek Walsh and Paul Hunt will be having words with me over the amount of drops that I had throughout the 7 hours. But, yeah, I learned, I very quickly necessity brings inspiration sometimes. I very quickly had to learn how to solo with my left hand because I was getting blisters on my right hand. So that had to change fairly quickly.
Interesting.
I'm not sure Derek Walsh or Paul Lund would be too happy with me if I was soloing around aimlessly around the middle of a field day from the summer.
Yeah, you never know. Possession is a key part of the game these days, I'm told. Carl, listen, best of luck. We all hope to see you back on hurling field very, very soon with the rest of your teammates. But in the meantime, just well done from everyone here on coming up with something that's kind of lifted the spirits and, most importantly, perhaps raised a bit of money for a really good cause. And just before you go, Carl, you did want to kind of give people a little bit of a guide as to where they can go and maybe just donate a little bit of money as well.
Yeah, again, I'd just like to thank everyone for the fantastic donations and support that has been given so far. And if there is anyone out there that would like to, that can spare a bit of change for the cause, I'd be incredibly appreciative. The GoFundMe link is available through the Mayo GAA Facebook and my own Twitter and Instagram pages. If you could spare anything at all for the causes, it would be fantastic. Amazingly, the donations are still coming in 2 days later as we speak at the moment. So if there is anyone out there that would like to contribute, it would be fantastic. And thanks very much again for all the support.
That's great stuff from Carl Freeman there. Mike, I don't think I've run for 7 hours around my back garden in my entire life, cumulatively, really, to be honest. So that's incredible stuff from him.
Yeah, I think we both could be members of that particular club, Rob. John, of course, ardent athlete and finely honed specimen that he is. He's now, I'm sure, rolling his eyes as he listens to me, you and I, shooting the breeze about this. But I tell you one thing, I don't know how Carl Freeman did what he did last Sunday. And I think, if he's honest, he doesn't know himself. I mean, to run, John, you're our resident expert here, but to run for 7 hours without stopping, 42 Ks, considering that the furthest he'd run in one sitting previously was 10 K. I mean, that's absolutely bananas, isn't it?
Well, it must be. I can only think about it in theoretical terms, I'm afraid, Mike, because the most I ever run is 5 K. I only took up the small bit of running I do in at my advanced age only about 2 years ago.
You have done about 100 consecutive ones, so there's a lot to be said.
Not one after the other in the
it's probably worth mentioning at this juncture as well that he was soloing a slither the entire 1400 laps of his back garden as well. Just throw that in there.
I mean, it is an absolutely incredible achievement. But what I loved about it, though, with the photograph of you could see that he had cut a nice path around the area, you know, with all the pounding he did.
Oh yeah, he's got essentially a boreen now for life in his back garden in UL. Yeah.
Brilliant. Brilliant, lads. All right, just to finish, lots of great things to get in the paper and stuff, but we talked about it earlier with Niall. Start with you, John, and Mike, just weigh in on it as well. I'm just loath to spend too much time while we're in the midst of the full lockdown that it is, trying to work out exactly what the summer is going to look like. And I think of Colm O'Rourke wrote this week about, could you really see 80,000 people, you know, together in the stadium as early as September? But I don't know if I want to read that at the moment. I don't know if a sports journalist or an ex-footballer like Colm O'Rourke is the right man to even work out whether we can or can't see that. We just don't know. But I think we're all acutely aware of the potential long-term timescale to all of this. But at the same time, we kind of need to take day by day, don't we, John?
I mean, that's all we can do. And I think that's true, I think, of every facet of our life at this stage. We just kind of have to, you know, we get up every morning and see what today brings. I think the reason all you're getting this kind of speculation is because there isn't a whole lot else to talk about. Though I have to say, it was quite funny to see Pat Spillane on the Sunday Indoor reaching for that familiar one again. Can Mayo, you know, win the All Ireland this year? Well, you know, that's a different question this year, Pat, because there may not be an All Ireland this year. But it is rather pointless, I think, in going beyond the day-to-day at this stage for all of us. And I think, yeah, you know, the problem, I guess, for sport and that this is the wider issue is that because we're living life, all of us, I think, with the realization that it is closer to the edge, that there's a different factor in our lives now that none of us have ever encountered before. We've never experienced anything like this before. And sport has been pushed out of that world. And that's something I think we're all finding difficult in our own ways, and we're all managing and dealing with in our own way.
What we're trying to do in the podcast, I guess, going forward for people is both understand that some people may not be listening, a lot are, as we saw from the last podcast, and kind of understand that, you know, we're down the pecking order right now, but also just reassure people that we're here, that football and sports talks, conversations are going on everywhere around the country and around the world, and we're continuing them through the medium of the podcast, and you a little bit further, taking that a bit further, obviously, in terms of the paper.
Yeah, definitely. And it's interesting. All our work routines have changed, obviously, in the last while. And we now just go to Westport as a group on a Monday, which is the production day for the paper. So we're working from home the other days. And that means you're obviously not meeting as many people. But it's been really fascinating. The last few Mondays that we've been in Westport and we've maybe gone to get a cup of coffee or whatever, just by accident or design or coincidence, a number of people have just asked me on the hoof when we're doing another podcast, or, you know, will you guys be keeping the podcast going? And I just thought maybe it's a sign. And funnily enough, I ended up chatting to Padraig O'Hara last week as well. That interview is in the paper this week. But we were chatting primarily about his TV appearance on Ultimate Hell Week, and obviously him getting called into the Mayo panel before Christmas. And we ended up discussing deep meditation and mindfulness as well throughout a fascinating conversation. But we spent a while as well just chatting about each other's jobs and how they've changed during the shutdown. And it's amazing now that while we've never been able to spend less time in person or in close proximity to people, the conversations I find I'm having with people over the phone or over Skype or over Zoom are going off in completely different directions than they would in a normal turn of events, because people just, they aren't quite as busy. They aren't, none of us are under the same time pressures. And I'd like to think that will seep through into the podcast as well, because people who are maybe listening to the podcast in completely different ways now are perhaps doing it at a slightly slower pace and maybe listening to the podcast
for slightly different reasons. I'm editing it at a slower pace as well because of the shop mic, but let's not worry about that.
That's a whole different podcast and a whole different conversation, Rob.
But also, lads, we are, it must be said, putting them out at a slightly slower pace as well.
And judging by the timer on this one, we may break the timing barrier of 1 hour that I always have. People will get over it. Don't kill me over it, folks.
Look, for what it's worth, Rob, the GA runs at about an hour and a half every week as far as I can see. So I think, you know, the podcast world operates with a lot of poetic license. So yeah, I think we're safe enough.
I'm off to see, can I sign up to the Ballinrobe junior team just to get my name on the squad list while they're not actually doing any training. John, what are you up to?
Well, just keep it on chugging away, Rob. I'm quite bemused about all of this to some degree, because as you know, I went back out into the big bad world at the start of the year. And I left my garden office behind me and thought, this is it. This is the new me for 2020. And now where am I? Back out the back of the garden again. But I tell you, I'm pretty thankful of it, because I know from a lot of other people who work there, they're all manner of ad hoc working arrangements they're having to cobble together. So I could be in a worse situation now.
Brilliant. Well, listen, get out of that office now and get into the comfort of the house for now. Mike, I'll be grabbing that recorder off you tomorrow morning, I guess.
Yeah, I've got a date with a couple of episodes of
Tiger King, Rob. It came up in conversation with Billy Joe a few weeks back. And Billy Joe, who, by the way, I've now saved in my phone as Billy Joe Exotic, courtesy of Tiger King on Netflix. And for anyone who hasn't watched it yet, that'll all make sense once you've watched the first episode. But that's going to pass the rest of the night for me. And then, as we said at the outset, once we put our feet in the ground tomorrow morning, we'll take it one step at a time.
Right, well, I'm going to watch, I've just got Disney Plus, so I can re-watch all of the Star Wars films. So I'm trying to work out, do I watch the old ones first or do I watch them in order of the films themselves?
Oh, and actually, Rob, you've just reminded me there, quick shout out. Speaking of things we watched and will watch, Colin Sheridan's piece in the paper this week, his reflections on the 1988 All-Ireland semi-final between Mayo and Meath is absolutely brilliant. And I'm probably biased, that was the first time I went to Croke Park to see Mayo play in the flesh. It wasn't my first time in Croke Park. It was my first time seeing Mayo play in Croke Park. And I will never, ever forget Liam McHale's two goals. The one that counted and the one that was disallowed. And Colin does a really good job, I think, of retelling that story through his own eyes this week.
Yeah, no, it's a brilliant story. And like Colin, I was posted missing for that one because, would you believe it, I was in northern France that day with myself and the lady who later became my wife, who earlier in the day had suffered what turned out to be ligament damage to her ankle. So,
John, 1988, you'd have been just out of minor, right?
I was a bit more than that. It was a more innocent time, Mike. But because I was so far north in France, it was near Cannes, I think. We were able to pick up RTE radio, and I remember my good lady wife, as you said, was not all that amused that I was taking far more interest in what was happening in Croke Park than what I was to what was happening on the medical front locally.
But by the way, lads, trying to describe the 1988 All-Ireland semi-final to Jer yesterday in the office was akin to trying to describe the potato famine to Jer. It was long, long before his time, so if you want to feel old, just talk to Jer Flanagan about the 1988 All-Ireland semi-final.
Stop. It's so far before his time. That's where you just, like, we'll really get into difficult territory when we realise he also doesn't remember 1996. Mm. Anyway, that's it from us. I think there'll be more such conversations, a little bit more detail in terms of how things are looking. I think we'll have a much better picture in about two or three weeks' time. But we'll be back in a couple of weeks with more podcasting. In the meantime, thank you, Mike.
Cheers, Rob. Pleasure as always.
Absolutely. Thank you, John.
Cheers, Rob. Talk soon.
Yeah, talk soon rather than see you soon. But see you in the somewhat distant future.
It's the new normal, Rob. It's the new normal.
I know. All right. Which Star Wars to watch first? Hmm.